Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
We are joined once again by Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello, Sean.
Good afternoon, Sean.
That's good. I can hear you both. That's always an exciting moment when I say that. And we don't know if we're going to hear any answers at all. So with gale force gusts blowing around the country, Dean, it's time to sit back in the sun and drink some cider.
It looked like a really good idea yesterday and the day before.
Yeah.
The sun was splitting the stones. And yeah, I'm kind of thinking that if I could hold on to the bottles of cider and not be blown away at the moment. But it'll be better later. And the sun will come back, because the one thing that we can rely on in Ireland is a reliable sunny summer of weather. It happens every year without fail.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So these particular ciders we're going to be talking about today, where are they from?
We have got two craft ciders. So we've got a cider made by an Irishman, a guy called Alan Hogan in Warwickshire in the UK, Hogan's Killer Sharp. And the second is a cider with an absolutely superb name. It's called Cockagee. And it is made in Slane, County Meath by Mark Jenkinson, the superb cider maker.
Okay. And are you absolutely certain that's how it's pronounced?
It is Cockagee, and I'm going to be talking about the potential for funky aromas and so on, but what I absolutely love about it is, aside from the double entendre in the name, which Mark loves to make fun of, the name comes from the name of the apple that's used in the cider. And the apple is named after a goose turd. So in Irish, goose turd is Cockagee. And this is a goose turd green is the color of the apple, so like duck egg blue. So it's a thing. But yeah, no, but what I love about craft products is that they are exactly what they are. And if there's something authentic about it, they don't let market research say that has to be changed. It is what it is, and it's absolutely superb cider, beautiful cider.
Right, I would imagine Cockagee qualifies as a quadruple entendre rather than a double entendre, seeing there's two of them in there.
I started losing count myself.
Yeah, I look forward to their marketing slogans as well. There was kind of a marketing slogan in itself, really. And so Esther, the two films today are both Netflix offerings, are they?
They're both Netflix offerings. I put forward the notion maybe that The Lovebirds is the first proper lockdown movie. Because it was very late scheduled for a cinema release, and it was snapped up by Paramount Studios. But as the COVID-19 pandemic started to make its way across Europe, Netflix got its shopping bag out and acquired this film very late, at the very last minute. There's a lot of buzz about this one because it's directed by a director who made a film you greatly loved a couple of years ago called The Big Sick, if you remember. A guy called Michael Showalter, and he's teaming up here again with Kumail Nanjiani, who was the star of The Big Sick, and they're coming up with another romantic comedy here. A bit of a genre buster, I think. It's a romantic comedy come thriller come cop investigation, murder mystery. It's an ambitious film, this one.
Right, and also Issa Rae, isn't it? Who people might know from her own show, Insecure, which was rather good as well. So
yeah, they have great chemistry, the two of them. You believe them very early on as a couple. I know we joked a few weeks ago about rom-coms being fully populated by slightly unhinged characters, but these feel very fully formed and very real, and they're, you know, a really good performance from both of them.
Okay, so that's first then, prospect is maybe promising. 2036, origin unknown?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good looking film. It's directed by a British filmmaker by the name of Hasrof Dullal, who he's really made a name for himself, first of all, making visual effects for the gaming industry before turning his hand to cinema. So it's a really good looking film, as you can imagine. It's set, you know, in one room, in a mission control room, and then in the outskirts of Mars, I suppose, for want of a better way of putting it. So there's a lot of graphics, a lot of that, you know, really needs visual effects to work. But for me, like, it was very generic. I mean, it's about, as well, a mission controller who forms this relationship with artificial you know, an artificial character by name of Artie. I would say Artie is no Hal, I'd say. And you do feel like you're watching it going, gosh, I've seen this done better somewhere else, you know.
And doesn't the film also feature some sort of undiscovered alien artifact?
Absolutely,
oh,
yes.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
Kubrick could sue them, basically.
I mean, if you're trying to ape someone, like, Kubrick's probably not the person to try and transcend, you know.
Right. Okay. So, not too promising for that one at the moment, but sure, we'll talk about that soon. Louise, who is from Cork, but also says she's 35. I don't know why that's a relevant detail. Says, I saw Cape Fear for the first time during the week. I have to say, I hated it. Such a deeply disturbing movie. I disliked Robert De Niro immensely. It actually ruined him a little bit for me. I had to share that, as I can't believe someone made a movie like this. How interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think he ruined Tiffany for me forever in that film. If you remember, he kind of sang, I think we're alone now, to the young female character. I was like, okay, that song's never going to sound the same to me again, you know. It is creepy. I've never done the repeat viewing on it, actually, and I might do that because I like Scorsese with the supernatural stuff. I think he's, you know, always for good reason known as a gangster director, but he, you know, he dabbles in other genres a lot more than we think he does, I think. So it might be time for a rewatch of that.
De Niro was supposed to be a repellent character and a frightening character. So, yeah, you could kind of say, isn't that testament to him given a great performance, really, rather than ruining it? Declan wants to know, Dean, would Dean recommend drinking beer only from a glass, as I generally only drink from the bottle, but wonder, am I missing out on a taste experience by not pouring it?
You definitely are. A huge amount of the flavour in beer comes from the aroma, and when you're drinking out of a bottle, you block pretty much all of the aromas. Now, you can get those aromas in a different way. It's called retronasally. So basically, as you swallow the liquid goes down your throat, and then the volatiles from the liquid comes back up the back of your nose, and you pick up the flavors at the back of your nose. But in terms of tasting beer, what's an interesting experiment to do is hold your nose and drink something and see how much taste you'll get. The only flavors that you'll get will be sweet, sour, bitter. If there's saltiness, sometimes some beers have a little bit of saltiness to them. And with other foodstuffs, umami or savory, they're the flavors that you pick up on your tongue. All other flavors, fruity flavors, toffee, caramel, all of the other flavors are picked up in your nose. And when you're drinking out of the bottle, you lose out a huge amount on that. So I'd always recommend pouring it. But at the same time, I also say people should do what they're happiest with as well.
Right. OK. But, you know, you just said that now. People all over the country tonight are going to be saying, try drinking that and holding your nose at the same time and making an awful mess. As Sabrina says, can you please let Esther know that we watched Long Shot on her recommendation? It was awful. We stopped watching it in the end and found the characters incredibly annoying. Very disappointed by the movie, says Sabrina. Now, I think in fairness, somebody texted in saying how much they enjoyed that film last week, but I think you agreed with them, Esther.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a total burn after reading thing. It's not substantial in any way, but like it's kind of Pretty Woman with the roles reversed, I suppose. Charlize Theron is trying a presidential run and forms this bond with her old, she's babysat this character played by Seth Rogen, and he starts becoming her speechwriter. And it's just, we were talking about Good Stupid and Bad Stupid last week, referring to Bad Stupid with Adam Sandler movies, but I thought it was Good Stupid. I thought it was a heap of fun. There's one scene where she's off her face on having had a wild party night, and she tries to negotiate a very sensitive deal. She's Secretary of State, and does it in a really childish, straight talking kind of way, which actually gets her results. So I don't want to be talking it up too much, but I had a lot of fun with it, I have to say.
Mm. Dean, somebody wants to know, can you get the German beer Klausthor Original non-alcoholic in Ireland? I had it in Bulgaria in January, and it's the best non-alcoholic beer I've ever had.
It is around, all right, and I've seen it around quite a bit, so it should be quite readily available. Most off-licenses should have it, yeah.
And somebody else, do you get blended beers the same way you get blended wines? I don't know if that's equivalent, really, in the sense...
You can't, Sometimes there's two sides to that question. With some beers, blending is a normal part of the process. So with a lambic beer, you can find that the fermentation is largely out of control. It's a spontaneous fermentation, so it happens according to nature. And then when they get the final beer, they taste it and blend it with other beers to achieve the flavor profile that they want. With large breweries, if they have a problem, sometimes what they'll do is they'll blend away the problem. So maybe 1% of the bad beer will go into 99% of good beer. And as long as they don't put enough of it in, it's a way for them to get rid of their problems. So blending can be a good thing and a bad thing in brewing. It depends on the way that you look at it. Mostly beers are brewed as a single batch, and the liquid you get out is the batch that you get.
Right. So let's move on to our first cider of the day.
Yep, so Hogan's Killer Sharp. Now, with both of these ciders, what I was looking at, the term craft is one of those terms that is kind of a serious part of my life, and also one of those things that leads me to wish that we had gun control laws like they have in the States at times, because when I was in McDonald's and saw that they were crafting burgers, I felt that if I had a revolver, it would have been time to just, you know, finish it all at that time, you know. It's a term that has been so abused and misused by so many different people. But maybe artisan is becoming a better term. And both of the ciders that we're doing, you describe as craft or artisan. And what that means is they're brewed on a small scale, but they're brewed with real artistry. Now, that artistry can take the form of using really creative methods in cider making. And that's the case with the Hogan's Killer Sharp. They're using sour fermentations to make the cider. With the Cockagee, they're doing a very traditional process called keeving, which all but died out in Ireland, except that Mark Jenkinson has revived it and is being done by a small number of craft cider makers in England. But it is a very popular way for making cider in France. So we'll talk about that in a minute. With the Killer Sharp, they're fermenting with Brettanomyces. In America, they like to abbreviate everything. So Brettanomyces is abbreviated to Brett. And it's a reference to a microorganism that can develop particularly sour and acidic flavors in an alcoholic beverage. And what happens with the Killer Sharp is that the acidic flavors that come through, you get a range of acidic flavors. So you get a certain amount of lemon juice. With every cider, you're going to have apple in it because it's fermented from apple juice. So you've got a base flavor of sweet apple. That's balanced out with a kind of a tart, sour acidic lemon juice, a touch of vinegar and cider vinegar in it, and then a tannic dryness that kind of dries the palate. So you've got a two-way balancing between the tannic dryness and the sweetness, and then the acidity of the Brettanomyces fermentation and the sweetness of the cider. And it's a really unusual taste experience because the tannic finish of the beer, of the cider, excuse me, gives you quite a dry mouthfeel, but the mouth watering of the acidity means that your mouth is literally exploding with juiciness at the same time. So you've got both a dry and a mouth watering experience in the cider at the same time.
Oh my God, it sounds like you need to drink this while holding a towel to your face.
It's a wonderful taste experience and incredibly refreshing, because that acidity, the best way I can describe it is kind of like the difference between drinking traditional lemonade versus drinking a lemonade that you'd buy in a supermarket. That the traditional lemonade has a lemon juice acidity that can be incredibly mouth-watering, balanced with a sugar sweetness. And with this, what you've got is you've got that sweetness coming from the apple juice and then the acidity of the citric lemon juice flavors. Also a certain amount of gooseberry rhubarb. And that's unusual insofar as it's coming from the way that the apple juice is fermented. So in the case of some mass market ciders, they use rhubarb as a kind of the equivalent of what we would call in brewing terms an adjunct. So, for example, with some mass market beers, you have rice used in the brewing of the beer. And it's a way of reducing the cost of the beer with cider. Sometimes rhubarb is used. But in the case of this, what it is it's the Brettanomyces working with the apple juice and then developing a kind of a tart rhubarb flavour in it. So it's layered cider, absolutely delicious. When the sun is shining, absolutely lovely, but it's wonderful as a tasting experience, no matter what the weather is, absolutely beautiful cider.
And it will be, yeah, the sun will be shining in the not-too-distant future. The awfully nice man says, I'm not disagreeing with Dean, but I prefer to drink from a bottle or a can. I love the way it makes me burp and then tickles my nose. It reminds me of the holidays. That's kind of sweet, actually, I must say. Dermo in Mayo says, blending. Am I the only one who remembers snake bites? The West's awake, says Dermo. Not if you've had too many snake bites there, Dermo. Yes, I have a story about snake bites, which I can't tell for legal reasons. And I'm not kidding. Right, what movie would you like to talk about first, Esther?
Let's do The Lovebirds for sure.
Okay, The Lovebirds coming up after this.
We can't agree on a restaurant because you have a problem with every restaurant in New Orleans, the restaurant capital of the world, and you can't decide.
Actually, Hong Kong is the restaurant capital of the world.
I just don't want you to embarrass yourself in front of your friends by getting these pretty basic facts wrong.
I don't hate restaurants. I like restaurants.
You literally spent several hours yesterday writing a negative Yelp review with your white woman fingers about that tapas place we went to, and I thought it was pretty tasty.
It was very salty. I didn't know I would get mouthfucked by the Dead Sea.
And I don't have white woman fingers. I've got meaty bronze.
Why are you being so loud right now? Okay, do you want the neighbors to think we're crazy?
Who cares what the neighbors think? They don't know us. Hi, nice to meet you. We're fighting.
No, we're not. We're rehearsing a play. It's a fight scene.
All right, that's the Lovebirds there. Ooh, wow, no more damning insult than white woman's fingers.
I know.
Notwithstanding your fingers, which are lovely, of course, Esther. But,
yeah, my fingers aren't too hot, though, at the moment. I'm on my third haircut, by the way, as well, so the hair isn't doing too well either.
Okay. Are you doing them yourself?
My warning to the world, yeah, I did hairdressing for a few months in my 20s. Just a little bit, and I was like, I've got this. The first two went perfectly well. And just share my experience with the rest of you who might be going into your third haircut. It's the third one where it all starts to fall apart. That's my bit of life advice.
Did you get complacent or had you already?
I got complacent. Yeah. I got complacent. I was only doing the barest trim. And then I went, I think I can do a half inch now, it'll be fine. No, it's not.
Okay, all right.
But you know, the 1980s will come back in eventually.
Yes, yeah, no doubt.
And you'll be fine.
By a fascinating selection of hats when you're next online. Right, so The Lovebirds.
Sure, who's looking at me anyway? Yeah, this is fun. You'll see some bad reviews for this, but I actually had a bit of fun with it. And if you got a laugh out of that... that Dead Sea line, I thought, man, that's really funny. If you got a laugh out of that clip, I think you'll mostly enjoy it. It starts so well, though, but I think the problem with it is it's trying to bend with genre. It's like part rom-com, part cop thriller, part whodunit. And we always celebrate these films when they do it successfully. But I suppose this one proves why people don't try it all that often. You know, it's very hard to harness a movie like that that's trying to do so many different things. And it's like, it's 5 minutes short of an hour and a half as well. So that is a lot you're trying to fit in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does have is a really funny script and a beautiful chemistry between Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae. They are fab in it. I'm sure you're going to see them pairing up again in something maybe just a bit more on the nose, you know. So it's directed by Michael Showalter, who, as I said, directed Nanjiani in The Big Sick, one of my favourite films of the last 5 years. And it starts really promisingly because we get to meet them, you know, at the end of their first night together. You know, he's leaving the house and you can tell by the smirks on their faces they've had a great time. And they just have that little moment where they go, will we go for breakfast? And you kind of go, oh, they're in love. And it's lovely. And then you fast forward to 4 years later where they're tearing strips off each other. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people will identify with these these characters because they become complacent with each other. I suppose you think, from that clip there, you think they're just two big, boisterous characters and kind of people who will squabble because they're both the big character in the relationship. But very quickly then it turns into a really kind of nasty row when they get into the car and they say some very cruel things to each other. So it's a brilliant first 10 minutes in the sense that you fall in love with this couple very early on and then realise, oh no, that they're going to split up, and you're totally invested very early on. So, you know, really good writing in that regard. So I think, you know, they're just about to kind of decide they've come to the end of the road, sitting in the car when they get hit by a cyclist fleeing a scene. So that kind of sharpens their focus a little. And as he kind of tries to get away, there is a guy claiming to be a cop who demands to take over the car, and then follows him. That ends really, really badly, and they realise that their DNA is all over potentially the scene, a murder scene. And it's funny in the sense of how much they mess, like how much they can convict themselves, I suppose. They both call each other, like they've got unusual names, Gibran and Liani, and they call each other by their first names in front of a group of horrified witnesses who then ring the police. And you know, it's no time at all before they've got them nailed down. So they decide to go on the run. Story is as old as time itself. They decide to go on the run to find out who really committed that crime and what they've been implicated in and involved in, to bring the real perpetrators to justice, I suppose. So it has a lot of fun with that, actually. And they are great personalities. They've got just a really good chemistry together, but they're physically good comedians as well, which I would not have known from their other work, because they do a lot of talky stuff.
Yeah.
But they're well up for it here. But there are some plotting problems. I think it's only 87 minutes long. It feels a bit too haphazard at times, and it just, in the last half an hour in particular, like you're trying to do a comedy, a love story, a crime story. They even bring in elements of science fiction at one point. And it's just too many threads to pull together, you know, so it all gets away from everybody a little. 3-star territory here, very much so. Some people will feel a bit cheated, I suppose, by it not following up properly with its premise. But I just found them great company.
Yeah.
They're great characters. They say funny stuff. And it was good enough for me, but I'd like to see them do something again. I see them maybe as a potential Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone situation here with these two leads.
Okay, well, that's chalking it up now big time, that is. Adele wants to know, is Kamal really buff in this? He got absolutely ripped for a Marvel role and now looks like he's made out of plasticine. I wonder, was this movie shot pre or post his body transformation? So was he plasticine in this?
Well, I can honestly say I didn't notice. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't notice one way or the other. I wasn't looking for a buff, I suppose. I don't even know if there is a buff scene. So yeah, these are very real characters. They're likable characters.
Yeah.
So I think any of that sort of stuff would be a bit distracting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So Adele won't be watching, basically, is what that means. Has your movie lady watched Extraction on Netflix with Chris Hemsworth any good? Dave and Kells wants to know.
I did. I thought it was grand. It does what it does very well, though. It's just not quite my thing. Like, it's a super violent, very stylized almost violence, where he's trying to, you know, get these people out, and it kind of plays out in almost real time. Hemsworth's he's just very good in everything he does, I think. So he carries the film, but like, yeah, not my bag, really. And it got a bit frenetic as well, and a bit, you know, they kept up in the ante with the action and the pace. If that sounds like a great idea to you, then you'll get on fine with it, you know.
Yeah, if you like lots of killing and no character development, this is the film for you.
Absolutely.
A few texts about Longshot. Watched Longshot last night too on Esther's recommendation, laughed out loud. Watched Tully the week before, very good. But the main thing I took from these two Charlize movies is her impressive capacity to lose weight. Wow. Wish I could do that. But I suppose that's the thing actors often have to do. But then again, they can make losing weight a full time job in between movies, and they can employ all sorts of people to help them.
I think they like doing that at least a couple of times in their career, from anyone I've spoken to, because it not only does bring awards, let's face it, but it also, apparently, you can lean into a character physically. Like, I know Christian Bale loves doing it, because the way he carries himself, the way he moves is totally different when he does that, you know.
I just thought Christian Bale did it because he was crazy, more than anything else.
Actually, they're all a bit mad, Sean.
it's a long shot again. It's worth watching for the hacked video scene, if nothing else. Hilarious, says somebody else. Luke says, I was surprised Andy Serkis was in this. Seemed a little bit of a silly movie for him to be in, even if he was in prosthetics. Not a terrible movie, however, just very silly. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, I would have thought. Dean, question for you. Dean, this is from another Dean who's in Toronto, though. Says, has Dean ever tried a cider from Ontario called No Boats on Sunday? Is it available in Ireland?
Oh, wow. That's a new one to me. And there are superb ciders in Canada, and they seem to be quite, beers in Canada, and they seem to be quite hard to get over here. Easier to get some of the American beers, but where you're looking at 8,000 breweries in the US, you're looking at maybe 20 to 30 in Ireland. It'll be one that I'll be looking out for when I'm over there, but unfortunately I haven't seen it over here.
Yeah, I don't know why Dean is asking. Dean's actually there and asking, can you get this cider that he can just walk out the door and get? Can you get it here?
He might be coming home and thinking, should he fill his suitcase and pay €50
a day more? Yeah, perhaps he should. Similar question. Where can I get a really dry cider? Like, really dry. I love a dry, bitter cider, says James.
Okay. There's a number of good dry ciders out there. Longways do a dry cider, Legacy dry cider. If you like dry and acidic, the Hogan's Killer Sharp that we're tasting was lovely, and Hogan's do a dry as well that's quite earthy and peaty. Go to the craft section, and it's the one descriptor that's fairly reliable on the label. Typically, a cider will ferment out quite a bit. So a lot of the sweeter ciders, what happens with them is that they're back sweetened. So an amount of sugars are added back into the cider to bring it up. But with some of the craft ciders, they're superb. They're like a dry Chardonnay, really well fermented out and a beautiful finish.
Francis in Galway says, I had 5 non-alcoholic beers just before the lockdown when I was out with friends, but I still had a bit of a groggy feeling the following morning. I thought it was the alcohol that did that. Might it have been that he had a low alcohol beer rather than a no alcohol beer?
Even no alcohol beers have often a tiny amount of alcohol, but not so much that it would cause issues. Sometimes, depending on the way that the beer is brewed, there can be an amount of enzymes in the beers that can do funny things. There's an interesting thing with alcohol and no alcohol beers. I had some friends who were drinking a case of no alcohol beers and got quite merry and had to sing song. And it was only on the second night that they realized that they were drinking no alcohol beers, but psychologically they were in France and they didn't speak French very well, so the sans alcohol on the side of the box didn't translate. you would think that most people would have enough French to pick up that sans alcohol means without alcohol, but they were quite merry on the first night, and then the second night they were quite embarrassed about the fact that they were quite merry the first night. So sometimes your mind can play tricks on you, that if you're tasting something that has a taste of beer to it, it can kind of remind you that this flavor has triggered a response before, and it can be a little bit unusual.
Right, we do have to take a break. We have a bit of science fiction and an absolutely filthy cider after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Esther and Dean are still with us. We've talked about Lovebirds, which is on Netflix and probably worth a look. And also one of our ciders today. We're going to be talking about our second one in just a second. On the subject of extraction, somebody was asking about that. This is the Chris Hemsworth movie. This texter says, I rescued my evening with extraction after nearly puking watching Bruce Willis's Death Wish. I used to think Bruce Willis was so hot, he's off the list now. Oh God, poor Bruce. Shuffled into irrelevancy. Imogen says, I'm going to give Lovebirds a go tonight purely because that clip made me laugh twice. And Esther said the first 10 minutes were funny. If a movie can make me laugh up to 5 times, then I can be forgiving about the rest, says Imogen. That's not a bad rule, actually, because a lot of the time you can watch a comedy and it's kind of amusing rather than you're falling around the place laughing. I bought a dry Irish cider in Lidl last week, expecting it to be like Normandy cider, dry as dust. Should suit your listener. That's in response to the person looking for a dry cider. Anne wants to know, why does Stella Artois not do cider anymore? It was my favourite. I find Arches and Bulmers far too sweet. I don't like too dry either. Anything similar to the Stella one on the market at the minute? Anne wants to know. That's very precise, Dean.
I haven't tasted the Stella the Stella cider, so I wouldn't be able to give a direct comparison to it. What can happen sometimes with the mass market products is that their expectations of volumes can be huge, and where a small producer would be happy with a certain amount of volume, that could be 10% of what somebody like AB InBev would be looking for. It's made by the largest brewing company in the world, so their expectations on volumes would have been huge. I think it might still be in the UK. Because I think I've seen some TV ads for it, but they tend to streamline their product range in Ireland because the population is a bit smaller.
Right. Okay. So let's move on to our second cider of the day, Dean. Now, I saw on Twitter there that some people were making out that it shouldn't be called Cockagee. It should be called Cockagay, which I think would constitute a hate crime if it was actually called that. I think it was something to do with the pronunciation in the Irish, but it's called Cockagee. So let's all settle on that one.
There are too many Me Too moments that I'm trying to sidestep here. What I love about the name, Mark Jenkinson is an absolutely superb cider maker, and he's incredibly skilled at what he does and makes a superb cider. But he's also happy to have fun with the name, and that's a lovely thing to see. You know, that somebody produces a superb product, but also appreciates that the product is designed for people to enjoy socially and have a bit of fun with as well. What Mark has done with this, he has recreated a style of cider that had largely died out in Ireland. Keeving is a process that's popular in French ciders, and it used to be quite prevalent in Ireland and in the UK, but it had largely died out until Mark revived it in Cockagee. It's a process where the cider starts out with bittersweet and bitter sharp apples. With cider apples, you can get bittersweet, bitter sharp, sweets and sharps. And where there's bitter in the name, that's an indication that the apples deliver a level of tannins. And the sweet and the sharp is a reference to the sweetness or the acidity of the apple. Those cider apple varieties give enzymes and proteins that are critical in the process of keeving. And what happens then in the keeving process, they mill the apples to get a pulp and then macerate that pulp overnight. And that allows the enzymes and the pulp to develop. And the following day, then they press it to get the juice. The process is incredibly long. There's an initial process where the clarity of the cider is achieved by a very, very gentle fermentation, separating out pectins and bringing impurities and cloudiness out into what's called a chapeau brun, which is a kind of a gel cap that forms on the top of the cider. And then the liquid is decanted from the bottom. And then the fermentation happens over an 8 to 12 month period. So it's a very long process, very artisan process, and it takes a real skill to do it. Now, one of the things that they talk about with craft cider is the percentage of apple juice. And with this, even though mathematically my son is doing his junior cert equivalent exams at the moment, so I'm very happy that he's done his maths already. This is a cider that has 110% apple juice in it. So normally the reference to the amount of apple juice is the amount of apple juice that's used in the making of the cider. But because you have this separation process where you separate out this gel of cloudiness, when they make 110 litres of juice, they end up with 100 litres of cider. And the result is that you get an intensely appley flavour. Keeved ciders can range from funky on one end to very appley on the other end. And this one is very, very appley. Superb drying tannins, beautiful apple sweetness to it. And the apple sweetness is achieved without the addition of any sugars whatsoever. It's purely fruit juice that's in it, but absolutely superb cider, wonderful. And Mark is a superb cider maker, great guy to listen to. He's researched the history of the style and has really applied it and is reviving and retaining a heritage that would have been lost without him. So it's lovely to see in the country.
Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is 2036, Origin Unknown. Here's a clip.
What's the top speed on a new rover?
We'll find out.
Hyperlight holding up? Right, I get it. corporate confidentiality. But faster than light communication, I mean, that's a massive breakthrough. Maybe if we had it 6 years ago, maybe.
Oh, look, my floor.
You sure you're ready?
You sure you're not just jealous? I have your old job.
Maybe get the Lando down safely before you start bragging. So now I have to wait to be invited in like some kind of vampire.
It makes sense. You've been dead to us since you switched teams.
Burn! Right, okay, so someone got a new job there. That sounds like the usual stuff of science fiction.
Yeah, that's played by, that's Mackenzie Wilson, who's played by Katie Sackhoff, who actually people who are fans of the latest incarnation of Battlestar Galactica will know. She's one of the leads in that. So she's back in kind of space land here. And she is the best thing about the film. She's very watchable. She's kind of this very cool character who is working for, she has been promoted by her sister and her boss, who is, her name is Lena, and she has a kind of testy enough relationship with her though, and they have very differing views because following a space accident in 2030, in which their father, who was an astronaut, died, they are involved in mission control, and they witnessed that death as well. It was the first mission to Mars. They are now sending, they're working for the United Space Planetary Corporation, if you don't mind, as they try to land a rover known as Little Red on the planet. But I suppose Wilson is very distrustful of the artificial intelligence system called Artie, which she works, but her sister is a fully fledged fan and fully signed up to the whole idea and the process. So they send up this rover. Stuff goes wrong badly, or otherwise you wouldn't have a film. But you know, I think the fact that both women have skin in the game and the father died in the accident isn't explored enough. It's very much in the here and now. It feels very by numbers the way it's made, and now the visual effects are fantastic. As I said, this filmmaker is a background in video game effects. So he really knows how to create the world visually, even though it was all knocked together in Pinewood Studios outside of London. But it's just a bit too derivative. You can't help watching it and going, I've seen this done better in very, very famous films and many other times. There's stuff happens late in the film as well that doesn't really feel earned, I suppose, in terms of the story. Stuff just kind of comes out of nowhere and you go, ah, no, come on. So it kind of lost me about halfway. What George Byrne, God rest him, used to call it a here now moment, you know, where you just kind of don't believe what's going on in front of you anymore. And that's, you know, in science fiction, that's pretty crucial, even more than a lot of other genres. But she's great. The performance is good. It looks good. Not a bad film, but you'd probably like 3 months time, put it on again on Netflix and be 10 minutes in and realize, oh, I actually saw this before. It's that derivative and that by numbers, you know.
Okay, it's a hangover film. So
kind of a hangover film, yeah.
So the opportunity to watch that every day on Netflix. That's it for today. Esther and Dean, thank you both very much. Always a pleasure. Our production team today, Aisling O'Reilly, Clara Collins, Michael Quilligan and Anne-Marie Kane. Ivan's up next on News Talk. Have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.